Welcome to Now Open the Podcast, the sex education podcast that's more sex than education. I'm Drew.
And I'm Jobim.
This week, we are unknotting the mystique and tying up the loose ends about shibari, the Japanese art of rope bondage. This is part one of Not That Innocent, a study on shibari, where we'll talk a little bit about the history of this erotic art, get to know a few fine folks who are likey the ropey, and some common misconceptions surrounding this art. Some trigger warnings. Well, obviously, we're going to talk about kink, violence, sex, maybe a little masturbation, maybe a little self-harm. So, you know, let's be careful here. This podcast deals with themes, languages, and situations that may not be suitable for young audiences. If you're under the age of 18, parental guidance isn't going to help you here. All right, I'm super excited to introduce our special guests for this week. We have shibari educator and performer Winter Nawa.
Hi!
Thanks so much for being here. And even though it's super early where you are today.
I think it is now 4 a.m. So.
Well, thanks for waking up super early to join us.
Not bad. Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm so happy to speak about rope in the Philippines.
Yes. Awesome. We also have sadomasochist and rope switch, Rai.
Hey.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us today, Rai in Winter. So we'll get to ask you some questions later about your own personal practice. But before we get into that, I think we need to give a little context to our listeners who are brand new to this whole concept. So could you explain a little bit what shibari or what rope bondage is?
So shibari is a Japanese art form that involves painting the human form using ropes. Rope bondage uses rope. It doesn't have a specific, when you say rope bondage, it doesn't have a specific cultural connotation because there's different styles. There's Western style and Japanese style. It's the biggest difference, but then there's also French macrame or macrame, but I've seen more French artists use it. And it's just restricting people for bondage. It could be an art, could be not an art. And a lot of the time, the thing with kink labels and kink definitions is these terms are very subjective to the person's experience. So the second you give a definition, there's going to be someone that says, but for me, that's not how it is. I have some background in philosophy, and I'm just like, you're always trying to find the ultimate end or the definition or what makes a thing the thing. And drove me nuts when I was new to the scene because everything's and everyone is different.
Yeah. Just like what she said, it's like, it's different for everyone. It's like you can use bondage for, like, you can give pain to the person that you're tying. It could be sexual. It could be non-sexual. It could be just an art form, like painting or something like that. And yeah, it really depends on the person, but technically it's just ropes tying people and having fun with it.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but from my understanding of the history of like rope bondage, especially in Japan, it was developed as a way to restrain prisoners to restrain prisoners in a way that was still humane. I guess
the famous kinky prisons of the Tokugawa shogunate. They were always tying people up and giving them pleasure.
So it's interesting how that evolved into what it is today, where, yeah, it doesn't always involve sex, but I don't think we're tying people up in prisons anymore. It's mainly for usually sexual purposes or just people who are interested in kink. So in all that time, a lot of styles have developed, and you mentioned earlier quite a few. You mentioned Japanese, Western style bondage. What are the differences between these styles?
If we could go back to, do you want to talk about styles first or the history?
Well, we can do history first.
We have more about history. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
So for the history, a lot of people do cite Hojojutsu, which is the takedown and capture rope. They did. They tended to do this because they would use rope because metal was reserved for swords. So they didn't have handcuffs like the West did. So for them, as they do, it developed into a very, very rich cultural context because they also have rope tying as a Shinto practice, I think. I can't talk too much about it because I don't know that much about the religious aspects of rope in Japanese culture. But there's that. They also used rope in the No drama. There were some, I think, no, not No drama. But there was some dramas. They had like a, they had a Japanese version of like the Three Stooges, but there was just two and they were drunk guys and they were always getting into trouble. But somehow they would always end up tied up on stage. Now the shibari as we know it, as it's done, is actually a little bit closer to that than it is to Hojojutsu, because Hojojutsu, they, the ties are, they're not very kind. They're meant to like dislocate joints if you try to run away. Like it, you'll dislocate your shoulder or
it's really
they'll put you
prisoners.
Yes, they'll put you in certain positions for interrogation and, you know, yeah, they don't mind if your body's intact because at the end of it, you know,
right. So
gonna...
the safety is not a priority in the other style. Yeah. Okay.
No. but it is very pretty. It's very streamlined. At one point, I was trying to study it because it's been cited as the progenitor of rope and shibari.
Is there, I mean, as dangerous as it is there a safe way to practice it?
Maybe study martial arts. Go visit the higher levels of, I don't remember which martial art it is. If it's like Aikido or Judo, there's very high levels of martial arts where they do take down and capture that involves rope.
That's really aggressive.
Okay.
Yes.
Ooh, we have a question here from one of our customers. Alice asks, I've heard people interchange this word with kinbaku. So what's the difference between them?
That's a good question. Very good question. I like that question. So kinbaku means to tie tightly.
Yes.
And shibari just means to tie. So if you're going to tie flowers, like you're wrapping up flowers to give to someone as a gift, or you're buying flowers from a store, you can shibari flowers. Kinbaku is more to a person because you're also tying with your heart.
What?
So that's where the like the inside is more. Because there's the connotation of if you're very familiar with someone, you know their body well enough, you may end up tying tighter because you know where you can do that. You understand their body better.
It's more, would you say that it's like a more emotional practice than just shibari? Because I feel like kinbaku is like you said, it's, you know the person well enough to know which parts to tie tightly. So I think it's also a more emotional practice than just tying it as an art because you're tying a person.
It can be. Definitely. And there's some people who will say they do kinbaku as they will introduce themselves as I do kinbaku. There's some people that will say I do shibari. I'm not sure if they go into the nuances of this word because I'm not a native Japanese speaker. But some people might be, or some people actually. Yeah, I think some of them say shibari, some of them say kinbaku. So. But the difference, the main difference that people have made is one is you're tying with your heart and the other is you're just tying, but both still have aspects of connection. Mm. Like if you see someone tying and it doesn't look Japanese, but their heart's in it and a Japanese person sees it, they can be like, oh yeah, that's shibari. you know, or it can be, you can be doing the forms, but your heart's not in it. And it's like, that's not, they don't feel anything. What are you doing?
One way that one of my friends explained it, they're also not a native Japanese speaker, so a little bit of an asterisk there, although they do know the language. The way that they explained it to me is that for them, kenbaku is, like, I guess, more sexual, but I guess what he meant was more intimate, you know? Like, shibari, you could do that, I guess, for performances or, like, or as a demonstration, but, like, kenbaku has that vulnerability. Sometimes a sexual component, but there's just like a closeness between you and the person.
Yeah.
And I think most Japanese tying would be called shibari, and then like a subsection of that would be kinbaku. So kinbaku can be called shibari, but not all shibari is kinbaku. And that's where it's like, there's people online that fight about this, so it's a hot topic, but it's a very good question.
So what are some of these different styles you mentioned earlier about, yeah, like macrame? I've actually never even heard of like French macrame style. I know macrame as like a craft, like an arts and crafts type of thing, but not as a rope bondage type of thing.
So yeah, so it's kind of like that, but on the human body. And it's super pretty. I haven't seen suspensions done in macrame, but I've seen it's a lot of weaving patterns. If I'm able to, I can share like the profile of someone that does this work as a really good example of it.
Oh, I'd love to see that. I haven't actually heard like macrame on the human body.
So, well, how about the difference between Western style bondage and Japanese style bondage?
That is also a very hot topic.
Are there camps? Are they rival camps? Is there a warring ideology between Western and Eastern rope bondage?
Is it like Apple versus PC?
Yeah.
Android versus iOS?
There used to be.
Yes. Well, I say used to because I don't participate in that anymore, like in that thought process. So I don't know if it's still going on. It probably still is for a lot of people. The way I've reconciled it for myself is there are two different styles that occurred in different cultural contexts. So they have different reasons for doing the things they do. Mm. Usually when you look at something, you can tell whether it's Japanese or Western because the techniques applied are different. So Japanese style will always start at the bite. So like I start at the ends and I find the center and this is my bite. Japanese style will usually start from the bite. Sometimes Western rope won't, like they'll start with it split or they'll start with one end, which I'm not sure why someone would do that. You want it to be flat, cover more surface area, distribute weight better.
So that's the main difference.
That's one of the main differences. Yes.
Because the techniques applied rope
differently, it's going to look very different. And there's also some classical, very classical Japanese patterns that you will see in different variations that like, oh yeah, that's a gote, that's a TK. That's
So Rye Winter, have you guys gotten into all these different kinds and do you have any preference for either one?
For me, because I'm more experienced as a rope bunny, but I recently started tying as a rigger only this year. But one thing that my master always tells me is that to go back to the basics. So one thing that I always practice when tying a bunny is the TK, the Takate Gote. So I think I would say it's not really my favorite, but it's one of the things that I prioritize in practicing now. Because a lot of ties or a lot of the sessions practices always start at the TK. Not always, but most of the time it starts with the TK. So it's one of the things that I prioritize in practicing.
I would agree. I also really have a strong preference for the TK because it's the classical Japanese style tie.
All right.
And it's how you graduate into more advanced rope is you have to have a good TK. Then you can go into the more suspension-y stuff.
It seems there is a theme.
Floor work's underrated. Like,
perfecting the basics so that you can really feel comfortable branching out.
No. Yes, yeah. You really have to master the basics.
Technically,
we have another question here from one of our customers, from Marielle. Would also like to ask about Seminawa. I might have butchered that. Is it any different or are they incorporated?
Rai might enjoy this properly.
Well, because I'm a sadomasochist, so Seminawa is basically just like in Baku, you're tying tightly, but also incorporating painful aspects to it. Like, you're tying someone, and the purpose is to make them suffer somehow. Like, suffer can be different, could mean differently for you. Like, you can make someone emotionally suffer from it or physically suffer from it. But basically, Seminawa is kind of like a sub-branch also of Shibari. It's like tying tightly, but with pain. And that's what I like.
It's a prerequisite. The pain is necessary for Seminawa.
Kind of, yes.
Okay. Seminawa is actually, the word made it back to Japan. So Nawa means rope. Seme is the way they say SM. So they're saying it's SM rope.
It's so it's a fairly new term? Is this a fairly modern term?
Most rope is fairly modern. Most rope, as we know it, Shibari, came out after World War II when...
Oh, wow. That recent.
It has throwbacks, let's say. So there is Hojujutsu, there is the drama, there is the religious practices, there is like the when you're transporting a prisoner, they're tied a certain way so that the way the tie looks, people know what they did. And then they're being publicly humiliated and shamed, which is why it had some of that shame aspect.
There was a way to symbolize it with the rope, with the kind of knots.
Yes. Kind of like a scarlet letter, right?
Yeah.
And also some knots, they're like how intricate the tie is, would also indicate the stature of the person being tied. So like, there's a different tie for this person is really rich and they did this, or this person is high up, this person is a noble of some sort and they did this, or this person is a poor guy that stole bread.
I would imagine that's even more embarrassing.
They
came up with a brand specifically for your social class. We also have a pretty good question from Matt who asks, where can we get rope? Will any rope do, or are there specialty ropes for these arts? Which I think is a pretty decent question.
That is a good question. This is where some of the style comes in too. So as Ryan and I seem to be more akin to the Japanese side of rope, we are going to prefer natural fiber rope. This is jute
rope.
Rai probably enjoys coconut.
I've never seen coconut rope.
Coconut rope is very rougher. The texture's abrasive. So if someone likes pricklier sensations or pain play involved, there might be rope. There might be coconut rope. There's also synthetic ropes. Here's a posh rope.
I like how you're just like grabbing rope here, grabbing rope there.
I mean, it's messy, but I can show you. Like, I have like my rope rack and my stuffies.
Wow, welcome to Rope Warehouse.
Boxes right there. So we're like, and that's my rig.
Bunny says, "Rise ropes gave me a neat burn."
Ooh.
Yeah. I also did very much enjoy the rope burn from the days after that Rai tied me. That was very enjoyable.
I'm honored that you guys liked my tying.
Okay, so Matt has a great question about the pros and cons of each rope. We'll get into that. But before that, usually we do a newsstand. But we'll still do a newsstand, but it's news about Now Open. So sad to say that this is going to be our last live show. This doesn't mean we will be gone. It just means that we won't be streaming live on Facebook anymore, but you can still catch us on Spotify. We will still be producing episodes and we will still be hopping on Facebook so that we can talk to y'all.
Yes.
You know, it just won't be the actual show anymore.
You'll still be able to find the podcast wherever you normally listen to podcasts that aren't live. So we're not going anywhere. We're just not doing the live show anymore. We're still here.
Yeah.
How about YouTube? Yes, I think we're...
Oh, well, I guess that'll be technically be dead.
If we do upload anything on YouTube, it would be audio files. You know what I mean?
So like, basically, Spotify. But yeah, so this will be our last live show, but we'll still try and find ways to hang out with y'all. Maybe we'll do a Twitter Spaces. Maybe we can do like a little gather get together and we can talk about the episode and like any questions you have. But that being said, please buy our merch.
We have merch.
That was a great segue. That was like a hard left.
Buy their merch.
Buy our merch.
Oh yeah, by the way, we have merch.
So we've been talking about merch for months. Like we announced the merch during our first anniversary in August. It is now November, but it is better late than never. So we actually have our merch stores now live. I'm going to add the link in the comments. You can also find it in the episode description. So you can actually go there right now and order merch. What do we got? We got a t-shirt designed by National Book Award winner Rob Cham. He also designed recently a Pale Pilsen can.
Yes.
So you can get a Rob Cham shirt. And you can also get
drinking
some
your Pale Pilsen, be like, same guy, same guy.
I am actually wearing the Now Open shirt right now. I am wearing it right now. This is the front. It says Now Open. And oh God, do I have to like, how do I do this? How do I?
Arch your back, Trisha.
Okay. Let's try this.
Okay. There we go. Yep. We totally saw it. That's the shot.
Oh, that's
yes.
Yes.
That is what the shirt looks like in real life. So you can't see me, but I'm currently wearing a 2XL. It's actually pretty huge, y'all.
And if you normally listen to our show, you might find your face on the back of that shirt. Who knows? Who knows? Is your face there? Oh. You'll have to buy the merch to see.
Yeah, try to spot all of us. Even Presh is there, but Presh is a little disguised. Yeah. So we got a shirt, which we're selling for $650. And we also have a bunch of stickers that you can buy.
Stickers.
These were designed in collaboration with Multo. So this is specifically for Kai. Scheduling is sexy. That one was designed
That's
Kai.
The best.
There's that also the a best. Glass dildo and these two sexy people having sex. So got a bunch of merch. Please check out our merch store and help support this podcast. All right. That's it. That's our newsstand.
And that's the newsstand sitting down. Back to the discussion.
Okay, so earlier we talked about the history of shibari and rope bondage and a little bit about the different styles. We'll get to your question, Matt, about the pros and cons of different rope. But I want to ask Winter and Rye, like, what about you? Like, what are your styles? How did you start out and figure out what kind of styles you were into?
Yeah, how'd you even get into shibari?
As for me, I started 2019. So I wasn't thinking of doing the tying. I was just interested in getting tied and getting tortured consensually.
It does look like fun.
Yeah. But when I started tying, since I'm just kind of new, I'm more on relying on what my master teaches me and just kind of like exploring from there. So I don't really have a specific style yet. But I definitely want mine to be emotional. I want mine to be connective. And I want mine to also somehow give pain to the subject. But, you know, kind of like in a sexy way.
In a pleasurable way.
Yeah. Yes.
How about you, Winter?
So I started because I had a partner that wanted to learn. And so I was trying to find a way for us to learn more. It was in the Philippines. And at this time, the scene wasn't that big yet there compared to today in the Philippines. And there were no resources. There was one person that seemed to know how to tie, and they were running a munch. And I went there, and I think, I'm not sure if I even met them there, but they might have been there like later on. And I was told by other people that they didn't really teach. And there was someone that was from another scene that was like, oh, I teach other things. And they seemed to know what they were talking about. And they wanted to start an educational community. So back then, this was when the Philippines only had one munch. And it was more of a meet and greet. And then a friend of mine wanted to start someone who became my friend wanted to start an educational group. And since I had joined the scene to learn, because I'm like, well, I want to know more about how people do this in real life and not just fantasy and books, you know, like, how is this applied? So we did that. And somehow by happenstance, we were connected. That group was connected with someone in Hong Kong who is actually, they were staying in Hong Kong for a while, but they have ties to Japan. Their name is Nuite Tokyo. I've asked him in the past if I could refer to him because I had an informal mentorship with him for a few years where I would try to learn something and I would try to see him once a year, but it's harder now because I'm further away. And it so happens that just by stroke of luck, apparently he was a very big name and I didn't even know it. He's the third deshi of Yukimura Haruki, who he's passed away now, but he was one of the top five grandmasters of rope in Japan. And his style, Yukimura Ryu, is the style that's most specifically about connection. Is when you get deep into the philosophy of it, it's not even about the rope. There are no specific Yukimura. I mean, there's a way that he does the TK, there's a way that he does certain ties, but the essential part of it is the connection. So I started off on the deep end and I had no idea, but I loved it and I still do. So there.
So how is this like connective style of rope different? What makes it, how is it more like emotional? What kind of like moves or philosophies do you have?
For me, I think you feel it. And yeah, for me, it's like, it's a little bit abstract to just say connect. What is this connection, you know? For me, it's simply like you care about the person, you care about what they're getting out of the experience, you care about their safety and where their headspace is at, and just through the empathy and the moment, kind of everything else melts away. And it's just,
yes,
you and the person, and you're in this little bubble, and it doesn't matter what like your shitty coworker said or did, or doesn't matter what troubles you have at home. In that moment, you are just in that moment.
Yes, I definitely relate. As someone, like, I have a master dude, like my master. So I get into subspace, and he knows me enough that when he ties, like, it should just be the right kind of pain. It just has to be the right kind of tight. And everything just, like, when you're in the moment, everything's just gone. You're in subspace and you're just, like, I think that's where the connection goes. It's like when the person just knows how to touch you, how to communicate with you.
How long have you been tying together?
About almost 3 years now.
So that's one thing I also wanted to emphasize and endorse is when you have a regular rope partner, you start to build a vocabulary of experiences with them. And you start, yes, to know, if I do this, then that happens. Or if I do this, they feel that way. They like this a lot. They really don't, yes, like that. So I'll save that for like never. Or I'll save that for like when I want to be a dick. So that's a thing. Then there's also the opposite of that, where switching can be a good idea because you learn as both top and bottom. And yes, also there's the idea of if you're tying with multiple people, you learn how to tie different body types and for different situations and different limitations and how to adapt to different things. And for the bottom side, you learn how to communicate with different people. Because otherwise you kind of insularly only develop for tying with each other, mm, rather than tying as a whole, where it's like, because you have to communicate in rope. And ultimately, yes, yes, in a way, for me, like when I'm in that space, for me, rope is a form of communication because of that vocabulary of experience. So instead of using words, I'm using actions or situations or placements of rope or sensations to convey what I want to express or what I want the person to experience.
Yes.
So I want to understand, I'm also a rope enthusiast. But for people who've never been tied up, it might sound a little intimidating, scary, counterintuitive. You know, like, why would you want to give up literally control of your entire body and put yourself at the mercy of someone else? Or why would you want to be tied in a constrictive way, especially with something like Seminawa where there's pain involved? So what are your reasons for getting into it? Or why do you like it?
I have a general response to that. So oxytocin. Oxytocin is the hormone that makes you feel love in your brain. And when you are hugged or if you eat chocolate, you get this feeling. And when there are ropes tight around you, it feels like a hug everywhere. And if you're intimidated, you don't have to be suspended. You don't have to go up. Actually, that's like you work up to that. You can start on the floor. Like I said, floor work is overrated. You can do a lot more on the floor because there's a lot less to worry about there. Once you go up, like that's when you need to worry about the nerves and the circulation. And I mean, you think about it anyways on the floor, but it's times 100 when you go up.
Yes.
And then there's adrenaline. If you're an adrenaline junkie, you're going to love being suspended, or you're going to love being like, what can I do next? I did this badass thing. What can I do next? Like, how do you top your own self? Like, I mean, not top as in top and bottom, but top as in like, do better then. How do I continue to grow? I had my primary bunny, Sakura. She was always looking for how she can do the next thing. And because of that, I grew so much. Because she was like, I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do this. I want to do that. So I was like, okay, let me see. How do we do this? Wait. Okay, let's go back. How do we do this? Okay, I think we can do it this way, but not that way. And try to figure out how to do it. And we do that. And yeah, I grew so much because of her. I would not be the rigor I am if it wasn't for her goading me and being like, because she's a bit of an edge player too. So she was a pro dom. So in her own, her risk appetite was higher than typical.
How about you, Rai?
Well, I like ropes because, well, aside from the fact that obviously I'm a sadomasochist, so I'm in here for the pain, but also because being tied, like Winter said, is, it feels like a big hug. There's also this, when you're tied and you're at the mercy of someone, especially someone that you trust, it just feels like you're letting go of everything that bothers you, everything that burdens you. And in that moment, you're just vulnerable and you're at peace. And I like that the most because, Winter, I like that the most because it's like, at that moment, you're just you. You don't have to pretend. There's nothing except you and that partner and this experience, this moment right now.
That's so beautiful. All right. I think that's a really
great
good
answers across the board.
Right. I think that's a really good note to end on for part one of Not That Innocent, a study on Shibari. Make sure to stay tuned for part two, which is coming right up, where we'll talk about the experiences we have when we are being tied or tying someone else, a few lessons we've learned from rope bondage, and a few tips on how to get started on your own. So stay around for that.